Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 818 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is your Valiant Sunday episode, and today Jesse and I are going to be talking about Bloodshot Rising Spirit number 6, and we're also going to talk about the latest couple of issues of Forgotten Queen, so issues 2 and 3 of that series. So I guess we'll start with Bloodshot Rising Spirit. This series, just to kind of give my thoughts overall, has been a bit of a disappointment, only because I think that there's potential there to have done something really good, and it's not really living up to expectations. And I think it's another one of those situations where some juggling of the creative team has caused some issues. You know, it was supposed to be Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler, but as I've mentioned before, I think they got sucked into Marvel and doing some X-Men work, and they really only worked on the first issue. And then we had Kevin Grievous come on for a few issues. And now this issue, issue 6, we've got the story by Kevin Grievous along with Elliot Rahal. The script is by Elliot Rahal. We do have better art than we had last issue. Issue 5 was just John K. Snyder on his own, and it was a little rough. This issue has John K. Snyder and Rags Morales listed as the artists. Colors by Andrew Dollhouse, letters by Simon Boland. So it's not as clean as I've seen Rags Morales' art look before. So, you know, and that might be because there's a couple of artists here. You know, John K. Snyder, as I mentioned, his art is not the cleanest style. So, like, honestly, I just love to see just plain Rags Morales art on this book. But at the same time, I feel like, well, if the story's not going to really be that great, then why would you want to waste an incredible artist like Rags Morales on this, right? Let's put him on something else and really take advantage. Because honestly, I feel like this series has just become something that is kind of a placeholder to basically keep Bloodshot out there, keep the name out there, the recognition out there, because we do have a movie coming next year. But we already know that Tim Seeley and Brett Booth are doing a new Bloodshot series coming in the fall. So I really feel like this is just a placeholder, and ultimately it's going to be a missed opportunity because, again, the concepts are interesting. Going back to Bloodshot's early days with Project Rising Spirit and exploring how this version of Bloodshot, this person that is Bloodshot currently, how, you know, what's his origin? How did they make this latest version of Bloodshot? And I think it's to the benefit of the series having brought on Elliot Rahal, who I think is a really underrated creator. You know, his Hot Lunch Special series from Aftershock was excellent. And I think having him on here handling the scripting, you know, he's better at scripting than Kevin Grievous. Grievous isn't a comic book writer by trade. He's a filmmaker. So bringing Elliot Rahal on to consult with as far as the story goes and handle the scripting, I think is a step in the right direction. This has been probably the best issue since issue 1, and maybe even better than issue 1, because issue 1 did feel somewhat incomplete in terms of story. So this is probably the best, like the highest quality issue of the series so far, but, you know, that's kind of like saying that we're putting lipstick on a pig here. It's never going to be, you know, a great series. It's certainly not going to go down as some great Bloodshot series that is a must-read, like Jeff Lemire's run. And, you know, again, it's just a matter of things happen. Creators get shifted around, and it's unfortunate because there's a lot of wasted potential here. What are your thoughts, Jesse?
Well, you know, I agree on this being a placeholder. Now, I'm going to give you two ideas here, okay, because it's very interesting. We're getting ready to do a podcast, you and I, here in a little bit, in reference to 2012's Bloodshot 2. And so, of course, I reread it. And then I'm reading Bloodshot Rising Spirit 6 at the same time. Now, it's been a while since I've read Bloodshot 1, 2, 3, etc. You know, because that happened, you know, 8 years ago or, you know, so give or take. So here I am reading it. And I thought to myself as I'm reading it, I'm like, you know what? To be honest with you, these early issues of Bloodshot really aren't that far off from what we're seeing with Project Rising Spirit in a sense. I mean, it was new. It was fresh at the time. And it wasn't bad. And so it kind of made me wonder, you know, like, are we being overly harsh here on Project Rising Spirit? I mean, I don't think Project Rising Spirit's amazing at all. But it's coming fresh off the heels of an incredible run on Bloodshot, where he really came to the forefront of the Valiant universe as one of the premier tentpole characters. You know, we had one of the greatest writers in the industry and some of the best artists in the industry just going to town with it. And, I mean, it really put the bar up high. And so it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy we've had here when we all sat around and said, man, this Project Rising Spirit is going to be terrible. And, oh, look, there it is. It is terrible. I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like Valiant had been set up for success and they just dropped the ball. But they didn't really drop it to the bottom. I mean, it's still not a bad series. It's just kind of contorted and confusing. And to be honest, here we are at issue number 6, and it seems like just a whole bunch of small stories, which isn't bad. It is a placeholder, you know. I mean, it just doesn't really have a flow. You know, I can't sit down with a whole bunch of Valiant fans or comic fans in general and just say, hey, what did you think about issue 6? And, oh, I really like the way it blended issues 2, 3, and 4 together and really, really, you know, nailed in the point from 5. No, that conversation is never going to happen. Humankind will be extinct before that happens, but it can't happen. I will say that this issue looks better, although I got to tell you, I mean, even on page 1, when you look at the, you know, the panel at the bottom of the page, you can even see that the box has lines that kind of overextend into the white. I mean, this is almost like something I might do with a ruler and a pencil in my own home, and I'm not even an artist. I mean, they've done a good job with the coloring. They've done a good job with the characters and whatnot, and I'm not going to complain much about the artwork. But I will complain to a degree that this doesn't really add a whole lot to the game. This doesn't really add a whole lot to, the world that was being created and that was already established and could really go places. If I was Valiant, I might have never even undertaken this whole thing. I think Bloodshot Zero was good enough for, early Bloodshot, character development, telling us how, where he kind of came from and whatnot. That's good enough. I might have done something like a future issue where, you know, Bloodshot was fighting dinosaurs in the year 3050 or Bloodshot Robot Fighter. You know, where it doesn't really impact, you know, the intellectual property in terms of movies and stuff, but it's something different, something unique that, you know, it kind of builds on what came before. And then maybe you might have even coincided with the 4000 and, two Fallen Kingdom kind of world. I don't know. I think Valiant has really got to smarten up because you don't take a premier character in series like this and then just drop the bar 25% like that. There's no reason for that. I mean, it was gift wrapped and handed to them.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I understand there. Okay. You know, it's Bloodshot. He's one of our main characters. We really want to keep him in print. We've got the movie coming. We obviously aren't ready to follow up on what Lemire did yet, but we got to do something to keep him in print. And yeah, I mean, they may have gone this direction. I mean, who knows? They may have gone this direction because Thompson and Nadler had such a great pitch and such a great idea. And then when they left the project, it was kind of left floundering. You know, they may have entertained ideas like, hey, let's do a future story. Let's do, you know, this story, that story with Bloodshot. I think they could have left the property, for a few months longer than they did without... you know, without it being published, and then come back with a shorter adventure that they could have, you know, stuck in here or there, like you said, whether that be the future, the past. They could have even done some sort of anthology series or, you know, a series of one-shots with, you know, past Bloodshots, the Bloodshot for Vietnam or World War II or what have you. I think doing something like that would have been they would have been better served because putting this out, it just doesn't, like Jesse said, it doesn't add a lot to the mythos and to the story, which in a way is good because this is, you know, doesn't live up to this volumes of Bloodshot that we've had previously from Valiant. And so it won't be memorable. It's not doing damage to Bloodshot as a character, I think, but again, it's not really adding much. And I say that, but I will reiterate what I said before, and that's that issue 6 is, I think, the best issue of the story so far in terms of Okay, so we've seen so far in the series, Bloodshot, they thought they had him under control. They thought they had his personality imprinted and sent him out on a mission, and he went rogue and ultimately contributed to the death of one of his teammates. Hardcore had to go in there. They had a long, drawn-out battle. It took two issues, issue and a half maybe, before they recaptured Bloodshot. And now he's back in the hands of Rising Spirit here. And it's, again, it's an interesting concept for this, you know, for this series, in that what Project Rising Spirit has decided to do, hey, we're gonna put multiple memory engrams, we're gonna put multiple personalities into this guy, and we're gonna see which one is able to basically become the dominant personality. They're kind of taking that idea of, you know, survival of the fittest or natural selection, and it's an interesting concept, especially when applied to the character of Bloodshot. So we're not sure what personality we're going to give him. We're not sure who he is. I mean, even now, you know, Ray Garrison is the name that's used and was used throughout the Lemire run. But who is Ray Garrison? Who was he before? We still haven't gotten concrete answers to those questions. And so this idea of, hey, we're just going to, you know, give him a bunch of different memories, a bunch of different personalities, a bunch of different past lives, and whichever one can basically establish dominance, that will be the, you know, the one that works. And, you know, we see that some, first of all, the teammates, the people that he goes out on missions with, don't agree that this is a good thing to do. The woman scientist who was very integral in creating Bloodshot, this version of Bloodshot for Project Rising Spirit, also thinks it's a terrible idea, because her point is, so what if the personality that wins is not the right one, right? And what if the personality that wins is a serial killer, or, you know, somebody, some bad dude, basically, which is kind of what's implied here as the story plays out. But at least it's an interesting idea. And again, I have to give a lot of credit to Elliot Rahal for maybe it was his idea to bring this to the story, or maybe he's helping Kevin Grievous flesh this out. But this is the first time that I've read an issue of Bloodshot Rising Spirit where I'm anticipating the next issue. Because so far it's been, I read it and it's been pretty much meh, and you know, I there's no anticipation for the next issue. It's like, well, I'll read the next issue when I get around to it. After reading this one, I am invested. I am curious. Okay, what happens next? So again, I have to give credit where credit is due. It hasn't been the greatest Bloodshot series. You know, Bloodshot's my favorite Valiant character. I've read all the Bloodshot books, you know, from the first go around of Valiant to this one, you know, Bloodshot USA, all of it. I've read it all, and this has been one of the weaker series, if not the weakest so far. But this is the best issue of the series. So, and I do kind of agree with Jesse, and we talked about it when we were covering the Lemire run, the end of the Lemire run. We talked about whatever follows this is going to have a tough act to follow. And we're going to judge it harshly, and maybe Jesse's right. Maybe we're being a bit unfair, and we're judging this too harshly. But I only do it because I care about the character and I want him to succeed. So from what we've seen in the new comic book, free comic book day issue from Tim Seeley, I think we're heading in the right direction. I think it'll be a fun series. It won't be the kind of heavy, make you think kind of series that we got from Jeff Lemire in terms of who is Bloodshot, but I think it'll be a fun series. I think it'll be new reader friendly, and I think it will hopefully draw in a lot of the people that are looking forward to the movie, and it'll be there. I mean, volume one and maybe even volume two. No, I think just volume one, based on, I think it's supposed to come out in October, and the movie comes out in February, I believe. So that'll be about five or
February.
Something. Yeah, so it'll be about five issues, so you'll have a volume one of Tim Seeley's run on the character out at about the same time the movie drops. Still be able to go back and get the issues. But yeah, I think it's a step in the right direction. But I do now finally want to see how Project Rising Spirit is going to wind up. Cause I do feel like that this issue finally brought in some aspects that were interesting. And I wonder if this is something that Thompson and Nadler had planned. And if so, again, I just look at the series as a missed opportunity. But yeah, at least I hope Rags Morales stays on it solo, because I think he would be a good choice for artists on the series. And you can kind of tell which pages he did and which pages Snyder contributed to, because again, they're just not like the last page of the series clearly is Snyder. It's not Rags Morales at all, just based on the line work. But yeah, I'm a fan of Rags. Reminds me, he did that Geomancer series for the first go round of Valiant, which I really enjoyed. So anything else you want to add about this issue, Jesse?
Yeah, I would ask Valiant in general, if you're going to write about personalities and development of personalities, talk to somebody who's actually taken a course or studied personality theory, because there's a whole science behind it. And you really kind of sound, as a writer, sound kind of dumb when you're just like, you know, run the program, insert the personality. Let's try to see what happens. Let's play Russian roulette with this program. No scientist does that. Like, you know, talk to a computer programmer, talk to a software designer, because, you know, the way, or a project manager, because those are the types of people that would be involved in this kind of project. And, you know, having worked, you know, in Washington, D.C. for many years and done a lot of project management and developed programs and done some amazing things for the Department of Defense, I can assure you that this is not how things operate. And that's cool. It's fiction. It's a comic book. I get it. But it was also a comic book when Miko Tsuyon was messaging me on Facebook and asking me, you know, specifics about gear, weapons, and how things are supposed to look, so that he could have a flawless execution of his artwork in, you know, Bloodshot Island. You know, good writers, good artists get good reference material. They make sure they ask the right questions so that they can bring fantasy to life. And you know, we want to watch out for, you know, we can have a great idea, but we want to watch out for turning his, a comic that could very well be based on reality, maybe some really good science fiction, and turning it into almost like, you know, one step ahead of Scooby-Doo. And that's somehow, you know, what's going on at times. It's not overly intelligent. It's not overly thought out. And the higher the IQ of the reader, the less they're likely to enjoy this book. And that's a problem. You know, you want to make smart books that, you know, people can read and say, oh, this is really interesting. It's the difference between, you know, Avengers Infinity War and Justice League. It's the difference between the direction Marvel films have gone and where DC films were going. You've got to do something that's, you know, that makes your audience care. If you can't make your audience care, then why are you even in the game?
Yeah, I agree 100%. All right, let's move on to Forgotten Queen, issue number 2. It's from Tinny Howard, art by Amilcar Pina, colors are by Ulysses Areola, and letters and logo designer by Jeff Powell. So we saw in the first issue, I know it's been a while since we talked about it, that there was this archaeological team, and they were searching for this armor that apparently belonged to the Forgotten Queen. This armor that was supposedly Mongolian armor from the era of Genghis Khan. But once the armor was recovered, and in the recovery of that armor, the most experienced diver on the team, Eric, was killed. His compatriots are pretty torn up about that. But the head of the team, the archaeological team, Dr. Sarna, she doesn't seem to be so concerned. All she cares about is getting the armor, and she retrieves it by retrieving Eric's body. But what's interesting is, as they've started to collect all these pieces of armor, the other members of her team are becoming suspicious, and they're realizing that, hey, this armor isn't just from this time that she told us about, because it's using different methods and different materials that weren't available in the time of Genghis Khan. So they're starting to have their suspicions about who this person is that wore the armor. Who was the armor made for? It's got to be somebody that lived a really, really long time if they were wearing this armor throughout different periods of history when different technologies and different materials were available. So that's the story that's kind of going on in the modern time. In the ancient times, the story, and we find out the name of the Forgotten Queen, Vexana, I believe her name is, and apparently she's in love with this daughter or granddaughter of Genghis Khan. She's trying to discover who she is and how she has these powers, this ability to cause bloodlust in people. And she seems to have some control over it. She can basically make people fight each other by stirring up their emotions. And despite all that, what she really wants is love, the love of this warlord, this head of the Mongols, basically, which I don't know how accurate that is. I mean, a female head of a huge barbarian tribe like that doesn't really seem too historically accurate to me. I mean, women were very subservient in that culture, but that's neither here nor there. It does make for an interesting story, because for whatever reason, and maybe it's just because Vexana in her mind only has the ability to bring hate. She basically sees her power as causing people to hate each other to the point that they'll come to blows or there will be bloodshed. And all she really wants is the love of this woman that's head of the Mongols. So that's the story that's going on in ancient times. And what's interesting is when Vexana goes, and everyone always calls Vexana a witch. And when she finally seeks out a real witch to hopefully find a way so that she can have the love of this woman that she desires and not feel so alone, when she does return there, she sees Gilad Annapada, the Eternal Warrior, along with other men of the time who are influential, and they call themselves Unity. So clearly a name that we've seen before, and I don't know if Valiant is using that as a way to try to tie this story into the more, the broader Valiant universe. I suppose it makes sense. But again, Vexana doesn't care about that. All she cares about is having the love of this woman, this leader. I'm not purposely avoiding saying her name. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's Khutulun, Khutulun, perhaps. I did find that to be it's an interesting story. But I did find it to be, trying to shoehorn the Valiant, Unity team and name here. It felt a little forced, I guess. But then it ends on somewhat of a cliffhanger when we see Vexana show up on the ship where the expedition is taking place, trying to reclaim her armor and talk to this Dr. Sarnia about what she's doing, why she's there, why she's trying to gather her armor. So it's been a good story, not a great story. I think that I've enjoyed it for what it is in terms of the scripting, the pacing. I think Tinney Howard is a talented writer. I think that the art is really good, better than average. But I also feel like this doesn't necessarily need to be a Valiant story, if you know what I mean. They did, as I said, try to put Unity in here, a previous Unity team, and that feels forced. But I think they could have just, like, this could be a story from any publisher. It doesn't, you take out that Unity aspect, and it doesn't need to be a Valiant story. But I also appreciate that Valiant is trying to introduce new characters to their universe. And obviously you want it to tie in because you want the current fans to care. So I'm not sure how I feel about the series in terms of how well it fits into the Valiant universe, but I do feel like it's a quality series, and I've enjoyed reading it. And, just to compare it to Bloodshot Rising Spirit that we just, talked about, it's head and shoulders above the quality of that series, I think. So what are your thoughts on it, Jesse?
I can't believe I'm saying this. I actually am enjoying this series somewhat. It's by no means, top shelf, but it's not nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. When I first saw that they were going to, the teases to this, I was really hoping that it wasn't going to be Warmonger. I was really hoping it was going to be like, Gilad's daughter, or something like that coming out of the beginning of the, branching off of what had happened in the early issues of Eternal Warrior. And then lo and behold, it's Warmonger. Okay. I couldn't stand Warmonger when she appeared in Unity. I think it was issue 18 and 19, if I'm guessing. I am guessing, but I think that's what it was. But I will say this. Surprisingly, despite the fact that the character, in my opinion, doesn't really fit into the Valiant universe very well, at least as written, isn't as bad as she was back in irritating as she was back in Unity. I mean, she actually, in Unity, she was almost comical, like putting Deadpool into, you know, a really serious X-Men issue or something. I was like, what the heck is this? And here we are now with this series. It doesn't look bad. It doesn't read bad. It's just not great. You know, and there are a couple nuances there. Are they trying to shoehorn the irreverent kind of punky, you know, bisexual, pansexual kind of, you know, strong female character who doesn't give a shit, you know, into the, yeah, probably. I mean, there's a market for that. And if we're going to exploit markets, might as well, you know, I mean, we got to ensure that our bottom dollar is met. But is it necessary? No. I mean, there's better characters out there, in the Valiant universe that, could probably be explored and published. There's different avenues that haven't really been explored deeper, and different, you know, different time periods that, you know, could be looked into. Hey, where the heck is Savage? You know, I mean, like that's possibly something. But as a whole, I really can't say that I hate it, because I don't. It's just not, you know, something that, like, when an issue comes out, I'm saying, oh, cool, I guess another Warmonger issue is out. I guess I'll read it. It's not like I can't wait for the, you know, Imperium 3 to come out, or I can't wait for Fallen Kingdom 2 to come out. You know, I really can't wait for those. I mean, I'm really like, no shit, I'm anxious about that. This, I'm just kind of like, yeah, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, and again, I wonder, kind of similar to what I was talking about with Bloodshot Rising Spirit, in terms of why did they decide on that? And it could have been because of just like the pitch that Thompson and Nadler gave. They may have given Tinney Howard some choices, like, oh, you know, why don't you pitch us on, you know, these characters? They may have said, pitch us on any Valiant character. I mean, we don't know. And maybe it was just based on, this is what Tinney's take on Warmonger is, you know, this forgotten queen and, you know, her journey over the ages. And so, I didn't actively dislike her like you did when she appeared in Unity, but I didn't really like her either. I was kind of like, you know, she was a little boring to me, a little mustache twirling, a little two-dimensional. I didn't feel like she was really fleshed out, and because of that, I didn't really care about her. I didn't have any reason to care about her. So I will give credit to Tinney Howard, and again, it's to her credit and shows her skill as a writer that she's making me feel invested, like I care about who Warmonger is, and she's a much more interesting character to me now. And you're right, there are other characters I probably would have rather seen get their own series, but at the same time, I have to give Valiant credit for trying to develop some characters that have already been introduced, as opposed to just keep throwing things at the wall until something sticks. You know, at least give it a try with a previous character. I rather would have seen something from I always get a mix. War Mother, is that
War Mother 4002? Yeah. She's going to pop up in Fallen Kingdom. I've saw a preview of one of the covers and her face is right on it. So yeah, I'm fairly confident that that's going
to
happen.
Yeah, and that's great. I look forward to seeing her again. But if I had the choice between a Warmonger or a War Mother series, I definitely would have chosen another War Mother series as opposed to a Warmonger series, or I don't know, like even a ninja series with one of the previous ninjas would have been great. I think Tinney could have done a good job with that. Who is the one? I think it was the 70s ninja. Was that the female African American one?
Yeah, the 1970s, the black female with the afro that had the lesbian relationship with the Russian girl that she had fought all those years. It was one of the most compelling and awesome stories they've published. It was incredible.
Yeah, I much rather would have seen
God,
that.
God, yes.
I much rather would have seen a series with that ninja. I think she was Ninja. Was she L? No, she couldn't have been L. She must have.
It was the Ninja G, because they were doing the gangster kind of Ninja G kind of thing going on that.
Right. Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's kind of tongue in cheek, I guess. But no, that was actually amazing. That was one of the better issues. Like, you know, you could go on and do a 25 issues on that, you know, and have it sequentially build, and, you know, the stakes are high and the emotions are there and your enemy becomes your lover. And then you fade away from the world.
Yeah, that would have been great. And I think Tinnie Howard would have been an excellent choice for that. I wonder if that was, I can't imagine she would have chosen this over that. So it probably wasn't a choice that she was given, but yeah, I would have.
She probably didn't even know about it.
Yeah, that would have been a great. So real briefly, we're just going to touch on issue 3 of The Forgotten Queen, because we've kind of already given our overall thoughts. Again, issue 3 written by Tinnie Howard. Art is by Amilcar Pina. Colors are by Ulysses Areola. Letters and logo design by Jeff Powell. In this issue, it starts off back in the past with Vexana having returned to with her little trinket that she had the witch make to hopefully help Catalan fall in love with her. There's somewhat of a battle with Unity, although not. And again, this is the old Unity team, although not really. And basically, Warmonger leaves. Catalan rejects her again. It's not. You know, again, it's that idea that she can only manage to bring hate when what she really wants is love. And I suppose this is what's forming her into the Warmonger that we saw. So that's a story that's happening in the past. And as she leaves and gives up on that dream of having that love, she actually ends up in the kingdom of Vlad Tepes, who most of us will know as Dracula. So that's an interesting aspect of the story, and one that's a little bit out of left field. When you're talking about immortals, you can pretty much do whatever you want. But so I found it interesting, but and it's not that it felt forced, because it's a cool idea to think about. Okay, so this legend of Dracula, that he had to drink blood, was basically a myth and a legend that occurred over time, that had its roots in the fact that Warmonger Vexana had given Vlad Tepes this bloodlust, this desire to spill blood, if not necessarily drink it. It was that bloodlust that could never be slaked, you know, like a thirst. He was bloodthirsty, not literally, but, you know, figuratively. He wasn't literally drinking the blood, but it was, you know, more an idea that he was never satisfied. He constantly had to spill more blood, because Vexana had used her power on him in a way that she'd never used it on anyone before. And so that's, again, it's an interesting idea, but you end up thinking, well, it's just in the story because it's a cool idea, but how much does it really add to the story of Warmonger in the long run? I mean, maybe it'll, as we get to the final issue, issue 4, the next issue, we'll see it all tie together. But it just felt kind of weird. So, I mean, the first half of the issue that takes place in the past definitely ties in with the first two issues, with Vexana trying to you know, win the love of this ruler of the Mongols. But then we get to the second half of the issue when it talks about the story in the past, and it's just completely disconnected from that. Again, a cool idea, but it just felt kind of strange. And then the story that's happening in present day is Vexana continuing to talk to Dr. Sarna about who she is and where she came from, and Vexana realizing that this Dr. Sarna, part of the reason she's been searching for Vexana and searching for this armor is because she's a descendant of Catalan, the woman that Vexana proposed to have loved. So what's going to happen with those two? They seem to they jump off the Seeking Expedition ship at the end of the issue in sort of a cliffhanger moment, and we'll see what happens with them going forward. But again, it still felt very much like the series has felt so far, which is a cool story trying to be shoehorned into the Valiant universe, but maybe not necessarily needing to be. Just let Tinnie Howard tell the story that she wants to tell. And we'll see where it ends up. So the tease for issue 4 is The Truth Revealed. So I imagine there's going to be some sort of you know, what Valiant considers a big reveal here in issue four. I can't necessarily think of what it could be, or if it will even feel as important as they maybe think it is. So again, go back to what Jesse said about Warmonger being kind of a strange choice to get her own solo series for Valiant at this time anyway. I mean, maybe they could have done it at some point. But I do still give them credit for trying it, you know, try to flesh out some of those other characters and maybe they'll catch on, you know, and maybe you'll have a way to expand your universe. It does become problematic trying to tell stories in a shared superhero universe when you have a very limited number of characters. So you do want to, especially when it comes to villains, because obviously you can tell a story of the hero month after month after month, but they can't face the same villain month after month after month. It gets to be repetitive. So you need more villains than heroes just in terms of sheer numbers. So any thoughts on issue three here, Jesse?
I think that the artwork in Romania for some reason was a step down. I don't know what happened. Like it wasn't bad, and then all of a sudden they're in Romania, and it looks like it was really rushed. And something happened. I have to read through a few times. I think the colors shifted too. Like all of a sudden we started having almost like a pastel-y kind of thing going. I wasn't sure exactly. Maybe it's my eyes. I'll also ask the question here. So really the relationship that Vexana has with Vlad the Impaler is not really all that important. I mean, it really doesn't help the story at all. But they go on several pages about this. Maybe it's because they're vampire obsessed. I don't know, but you know, but who cares? Because it really doesn't make a big deal. I mean, you know, it's there and then it's not. And then they bring in, you know, a character that actually could have a huge impact on the story. I mean, due to blood relations with you know, her grandmother, you know, and the relationship that Vexana had before that, and that's over in two panels. So I'm like, wait a minute, what? Why that seems what? You know, but here's the real thing. The big reveal at the end, right? Well, okay, that, yeah, sure, whatever. That makes, I guess, sense because immortals don't come out of anywhere. But we already know where the immortality of Antipata brothers came from. Because we read Archer Armstrong. We read Eternal Warrior. We understand the history of all that. You know, and the boon, and how it's all connected, and how they were, and the price that came with that. That whole history is already fleshed out. That whole history is already there. There's already, you know, Legends of the Geomancer, or, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4, where it actually broke down exactly how this all played out. And also, if you've read Ivar Timewalker, which I certainly have, it goes throughout history and whatnot. So here we are all of a sudden with a big reveal that has never appeared in the history of this mythos. And we're talking about shoehorn, man. We're freaking shoveling it into that shoe because, you got to expand your universe. But if you're really going to do that, man, can you sit down and have like a think tank or something first? And, you know, how are we going to play this out? And how is this really going to work? And, you know, I don't know, even make it up to where a character in the background in Archer and Armstrong Zero was her all along or something. But, you know, that'd be cool for, you know, some sort of connection. But shoehorn is really the right word for this.
Yeah, how that plays out, how, I mean, again, and I know it's tough, right? It's tough because maybe they feel it's a great idea to give the Antipata brothers a sister, you know, maybe they feel like it's super added to the universe, but they didn't think of it back then. You know, I mean, it's kind of tough. It's when you're starting a new universe, it goes to show you should really plant a bunch of Easter eggs or just put random people here or there. And then maybe, you know, future storytellers come along and pick up those threads, but it does make it tough. I mean, it's the whole reason that the term retcon or retroactive continuity even exists, because they do go back and, you know, shoehorn things in and try to make them fit and have them make sense. And yeah, how does it work exactly? I guess we'll have to wait for issue four to see, because the truth will be revealed in issue four. So again, I am enjoying it, but just like Jesse said, the second half of the issue with the, you know, Vlad thing, again, cool idea, you know, War Mother is basically responsible for the, or Warmonger rather, is responsible for the legend of Dracula. And that's a cool idea. But again, what does it really bring to the story? You know, it's there and gone. And if you take it out, it doesn't really make a difference. And they did devote quite a few pages and panels, a lot of real estate to that idea. And while it's a cool idea, how much does it actually add to the story? I don't know. And what I'll really have a problem, it'll bother me a lot more if we get to the end of issue four and I feel like issue four was rushed or they needed more real estate, more time and page space to flesh out the story. Then I'm going to think back to this issue and go, well, you should have taken out that Dracula stuff and told the story that we really care about as Valiant fans. But hopefully that won't be the case. But again, I do feel like this is a story that's worth reading. I am more interested in Warmonger than I have been. She doesn't feel quite so mustache twirling now. She feels like a more three-dimensional character. So if that's all that comes out of the series, it'll be a little disappointing in a way, but I still feel like it'll be a series that's worth having been told. But like Jesse and I said, if we could have got a Ninja G series, I'm not going to be able to get that out of my head now. Yeah, Ninja G series would have been amazing. Really, really cool 70s spy stuff with black female lead kicking butt. Yeah, that would have been cool. Maybe we could still get it. Who knows? I'll have to put a bug in the ear of the powers that be at Valiant next time I see him. All right. Well, that's all I have to say about these issues. Anything else you want to add, Jesse?
No, I think we've beat that one to death. Don't be afraid to read it. It's certainly good to, look in and be aware. I'm going to be, I'd be shocked if, I don't even want to say that it's about the character. It's really just, it's not well constructed. And I like quality a bit. I'd like to see Valiant produce a better product because I know that they can, because they're doing it right now. You know, it's part of the thing. There's a lot of hit and misses.
Yep, I agree 100%. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network, so when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites, and finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.